Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for January's Exotics Club webinar. I'm delighted to welcome back to Webinar Club our speaker for today, lecturer and clinical manager of the Exotic Animal and Wildlife Clinic at the Royal Dick School of Veterinary Studies, University of Edinburgh, Kevin Eatwell. Thank you, Kevin. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much and welcome everybody to today's webinar. And the aim really is to go through some practical radiography of rabbits. I think it's very important that we sort of work out how we're going to get the images that we need clinically to help us guide these patients. And of course, we, you know, why do we choose radiography? I mean, there's so many reasons that we've got out there, dental disease being one, sinusitis, rhinitis, otitis, dyspnea, a whole catalogue of GI-related diseases as well. So obviously there's a massive array of conditions where radiography is really is quite important to evaluate these, not only to give us a diagnosis perhaps, but also giving us a prognosis for the outcome for that patient too. And of course, depending on level of severity of illness, you may be wanting to think of ways of practically getting a radiograph with them conscious. You may be thinking about some form of sedation. You may be thinking about needing a full anaesthetic for some of these. And of course, then you've got the added question of what do I do with contrast material and what do I need to do there as well. So the webinar really is intending to go through your range of options, I guess, at trying to get clinically useful radiographs from your rabbit patients. And if we start at the head end, really, which is a common sense, obviously, you know, one of the main indications is for rabbits is for head radiography. And if you want to get detailed analysis of your images, you've got to get perfect alignment. And that's difficult to get with a lot of rabbits conscious. So really for these, we do recommend that you place an intravenous line into the marginal ear vein. And then you've got access then to give intravenous sedation. And I think if you're looking at doing radiography as a standalone sort of procedure, then you don't want to be giving IM sedation for reasons of protracted time before they're ready for radiography and maybe prolonging recovery as well. So having intravenous access speeds this entire process up for you. And obviously very common agents that people would use are dexmedetomidine, ketamine and buprenorphine, for example. And although these are classically used intramuscularly, you can use them intravenously. You'll probably get away with, I would say, a half to a quarter maybe of the dose that you would be traditionally using intramuscularly. But obviously you're trickling in a small amount just to get the level of sedation that you need. And obviously with atipamezole on hand, then you can get quite a speedy recovery from that too. Now, of course, your concern is when you're looking at these is you may be thinking about, well, hang on a minute, the patient I'm looking at getting my radiographs from may be a critical case or an urgent case. And then obviously using an alpha 2 such as dexmedetomidine may lead to some difficulties. And that obviously can be of concern for these patients as well. And so to some extent, if you're looking at an alternative maybe with minimal cardiovascular and respiratory effects, then midazolam and ketamine are very, very nice to be used. If you think back to the sort of treatments you'd be giving for a cat involved in an RTA, you know, diazepam, ketamine are very nice for getting it's just a mild sedation for imaging. And it also works very, very nicely in the rabbits too. And there we're using sort of typically 0.2 mg per kg, 5 mg per kg of those two agents. And again, that's given to effect. And I'd argue if you're having to go through and look at doing a range of images, maybe consider the more complex ones first, simply because you've got the heavier level of sedation. And then as the sedation starts to wear off, you can start doing more easier positioning subsequently to use those up. In terms of dose rates that we use for dexmedetomidine, ketamine and buprenorphine, my standard sort of doses really are 25 micrograms per kilo of the dexmedetomidine, 5 mg per kg of the ketamine, and 0.03 mg per kg of the buprenorphine mixed in the same syringe. And you'll probably find that a half or a third of that dose rate will get that adequate sedation for your imaging to be undertaken. So if we start looking at the views that we're considering for head radiography, then we obviously want to get minimize our risk of rotation, and the first view probably is a DV view, but we need to try and get the mandible horizontal on the x-ray plate, and in order to achieve that, you've really got to put pressure behind the ears to get the mandible level. And I suppose there's a couple of ways you can do that. With a sedated rabbit as we have here, you can place just a straight sandbag across the back of the head to try and stop them sort of looking down at the x-ray plate, as it were, to smooth out that jawline. Or alternatively, like I say, if you've got more sedation on board, you can actually just use Micropore or Durapore in place, again applying compression sort of either behind the ears or at the back of the skull to straighten out the mandible. And obviously your DV view really, I guess in my mind, serves a couple of purposes for you. First one of these would be to look at tooth roots, and obviously if you're getting extension in the cheek tooth tooth roots, you'll see them extending out into the zygomatic arch or into the orbit on this view, which obviously can be useful. And secondly, if you're dealing with patients with neurological signs or swellings at the base of the ear where we're concerned you may have otitis media present, then really you're taking a DV view, which arguably is the best view for this, looking to see if there's any suggestion of otitis media. And this can be quite difficult to detect on this particular image here. I don't think I would be able to quantify whether we did or did not have otitis media on the lower side. But if we look, for example, at this image here, I think there's a very clear distinction in bone density between those two sides. And what you're really looking for, I guess, in more short-term disease, you're looking for increased soft tissue density within the bulla. But if you're dealing with more chronic, long-standing disease where you've got bone erosion, then you may have reduced bone density around that soft tissue changes. So DV is considered the best view, really, for trying to evaluate for otitis media, but obviously there's open mouth views and different range of options. You've got to try and get the best imaging that you can. And this is that image just enlarged for you here, but I hope it's fairly clear that we have got increased soft tissue density through here, and we obviously have some distortion and change in the bone around the lateral sort of aspect of that bulla as well. So that's a fairly convincing otitis media case. And this is just another one again showing more marked changes again in this bulla here on the left hand side here, and again lots of bone remodeling where it's been eroded due to the otitis media. If you're looking at doing differing views of the head to try and help you quantify alternative options, obviously you've got your dorso ventral, which works quite nicely, but again you've got to bring the skull sort of level with that plate, so this needs to be leveled out much more than we've got at this position at the minute. And if you're looking at trying to skyline these bulli and off the ventral aspect of the palate almost, then you've got to go for a rostrocaudal view. We actually generally put a little bit of Durapore through the center of the mouth, and this allows us to sort of just part those teeth just enough to try and separate the back teeth a little bit, but also so you can see the bulli off the bottom of the skull. And this really is sort of the just for the skull head, the sort of position that we're aiming to try and get here, to get a genuine rostrocaudal. And what we're looking for here is the bulli are just coming off the bottom of the skull here, and you can see obviously straight down on the view here, you're trying to skyline them onto your x-ray plate. Now lateral views, I think for me, I would say there's a couple of reasons the lateral views are worthwhile here. It's probably primarily for dental pathology. When you're dealing with rabbits coming in with dental disease or dental abscesses, this is going to give you a very good overview of the nature and extent of changes within the dentition, both in terms of exposed root overgrowth, but also obviously in terms of periapical halos or osteomyelitis and infection of the bone of the skull as well. And there's lots of different grading systems for this, and I think we can get very easily bogged down into that. I think the main issue is you've got to look at the general sort of appearance and state of the teeth, the general occlusal plane, and obviously then evaluate bone as well of mandible and maxilla. And when you're doing these conscious, the main problem here again is they have a tendency to look sort of downwards and tip the head down, and that makes a true lateral more difficult to obtain. And what you really need to be doing with these is slightly elevating the nose, and we just sort of use foam pads for this, to try and get a perfect true lateral. So you've got superimposition of the temporomandibular joints and the teeth on a lateral view. And that can work relatively okay, again with a little bit of sedation, maybe a sandbag just to keep them from moving as well, to achieve that. You can do it conscious. This is a conscious rabbit here, and what we've done here is we blink of this rabbit. So we're applying gentle pressure to the orbits with some vet wrap over the eyes. In this case, we've looped it back around the ears as well. You must keep, if you're going to go for this sort of technique, you must absolutely keep the nares clear, of course, because they are near obligate nasal breathers, so there's no way you want to occlude that. Coupled with a sandbag for adding some extra weight and obviously being very quiet, can facilitate getting this in the right position and getting clinically useful views. But obviously, if they're under sedation, then that makes your life a little bit easier. And again, we're just down to using micropore here, putting pressure behind the skull just to tip that mandible so they're not looking down at the plate and we're getting a true lateral. And again, this is just showing you the picture of the a skull here, just showing you what we're really aiming for on here. And I suppose, in terms of the bits that we're really interested in here, we're interested in obviously incisor of root here. On both of these, we're interested in the plane, and you should get a gradual narrowing of the palate versus the mandible here for normal occlusion. We want to get the cheek teeth in perfect alignment so they are superimposed over each other, and we can get an idea of the occlusal surfaces with that. Your bully will be perfectly superimposed at the back, and obviously it will be difficult to interpret those. And your temporomandibular joint should also be perfectly superimposed. In terms of looking for nasal pathology, you're obviously going to have both sides again perfectly superimposed, but obviously quite a clear view into there as well. And this really is a reasonable starting point, not perfect. Intubated rabbit under anaesthesia, of course. Fairly good in terms of the alignment that we've got here. The bully are pretty much quite nicely superimposed. We've got a good view of the occlusal surfaces here, which obviously are quite variable in this particular rabbit. And maybe we've got here, this isn't quite coming together as much as we would like. No evidence for osteomyelitis coming through here, which is obviously good as well. So not bad teeth, but not the best teeth in the world either. And obviously, as we're going through these, you're progressing through in cases looking at where you've got obviously the incisor alignment has been completely taken out of sensible plane here. These are much more curved than they should be bringing in here. But we obviously have periapical halo starting, tooth roots pushing, starting to work their way through mandible here as well, as well as obviously some very elongated teeth coming through here. So again, this is the case where we're looking at giving a prognosis. Obviously, there's marked changes here that we can see. Slightly put off by being not a perfect angle on this particular image. But obviously, as we go through looking at some of these cases, and really I'm just getting you to give you a feel of severity, you can start to see now where we've got increased reaction around the roots here. We've got roots pushing through of the cortex of the mandible here. We've got resorbing roots being retained, which are sort of going to be creating abscesses pretty soon in this sort of location here. So this really is your next step on more teeth markedly distorted here. So from the point of view giving you an overview of severity, the lateral view is pretty good for getting a feel for nature and extent of disease in the rabbits. And obviously, when you're looking then at more severe disease with root pathology, abscess formation starting in here, you can see we've got markedly distorted roots. Again, the lateral view is difficult because you do have superimposition of the arcades, but again, you can see marked changes in terms of incisor alignment here as well. When you're progressing to the point of getting abscesses present, these are normally present as sort of periapical halos, quite marked areas where you may have gas present and a loss of bone density, and we've got them quite nicely around here. This is sort of basically an abscess forming. This is a previous animal that's had a retrobulbar abscess and had to have a nucleation as well. So obviously ongoing dental pathology with this particular case. And again here on this one, we've got much more marked osteolysis here. Abscess formation present, periapical halos, gives you an idea of the extent of the infection that you've got, and gives you an idea of how all of the teeth are looking in these cases. And obviously, taking it to the sort of the end stage really of severe disease, with osteomyelitis present, incisors here have been sort of partly removed and some left behind. It's really quite a disaster really of a dentition in this particular case. Now, of course, having done a general overview of that, you're going to want to then turn around and go, okay, I need to start viewing these arcades individually to give me a chance to work out what's going on. In order to do that, we're going to have to start rotating this rabbit. And you're looking really for a 30 to 45 degree rotation. Normally, again, sedation is needed to get the head into the right position that you'd like for this. And your aim really is to take the maxillary mandibles out of superimposition. So you're going to be able to look at the mandible of one arcade and the maxilla of the other arcade, with the other maxilla of the mandible being superimposed. And then obviously, you're just going to move the head 30, 45 degrees in the other direction to get the other two arcades nice and clear. And this allows you then to evaluate individual arcades here for level of severity and looking for, obviously, if you're planning for abscess surgery, how many tooth roots you think are involved and how many teeth are likely to be needing to be removed. And this is sort of giving you that sort of rotation here. So we've managed to get one maxillary arcade isolated here, which aren't too bad. This is your mandibular arcade here, so we're able to look at the tooth roots on this side individually. And obviously, here we've got the second mandible and the other maxilla superimposed in there. You also get quite a nice separation of your bully. I guess I would say from this, I'm fairly happy that there's no soft tissue density in this tide. But again, this is really it for teeth. You're doing these oblique views. And the other issue, I suppose, for head radiography is looking for level and severity of sinus disease. And I think this can be quite depressing, in that normally you're looking at either you're getting the sinuses superimposed by taking your lateral view, and this is obviously quite a nice lateral view here. But what you're trying to evaluate really is whether you are seeing increased soft tissue density in this area beyond normal. And actually, in this case, this animal has severe unilateral disease, but I'm not convinced I'd be able to specify where and how severe that infection is on the basis of this lateral radiograph. DVs, VDs are all very well and good, but again, you've got mandible superimposing, and that obviously is another limiting factor for the usefulness of radiography for determining the extent of infection in the sinuses or rhinarium in the rabbits. Moving next on your list, really, I guess, is we want to be looking at thoracic radiographies here. And really, you've got a couple of options here. First one, which I guess a lot of people would do, would be doing conscious or sedated chest radiography. But that obviously prevents you from inflating the thoracic cavity. Your second option is to anaesthetize them, intubate them, take inspiratory images, and do it that way. And there is, to be honest, quite a marked difference between your ability to interpret these two images depending on their quality. So in preference, I would always be looking for doing an inspiratory thoracic radiograph if I could. Okay, the question is why do you want thoracic radiography? And it may be that your patient is dyspneic, and it may be you're not wanting to anaesthetize this dyspneic patient, but of course it may be you can't sedate them, and it may be this patient really is very reluctant to lie on their side because of the dyspnea, and obviously trying to add weight to that with a sandbag or something is going to make the situation worse. So if you are able to sedate your rabbit and pop it on its side, obviously you can get reasonable sort of images that way. If they're intubated, you can get really nice position. You can bring the legs forward, so you can get some very, very nice inflated views, both lateral and but also ventrodorsal views as well for that. And I think if we're looking just at these two images here, you can just see the difference that you're going to get between a sedated, non-intubated versus an animal that has been intubated and has been had some inflation provided. The difference in density of your lung tissues that you're viewing is quite marked and allows you to get a much better idea of what is going on and changes here. So if you can, fine, but obviously we're very, very well aware there's lots of reasons where that may become difficult. And if you are going to intubate them, just make sure it's very easy with the rabbits because they're quite short on the chest cavity to get your ET tube down into the carina. So just be very cautious depending on how you're intubating your rabbits. That can be a problem you may come across. But done well, you can get some really nice views on this. And again, getting these legs drawn forward out of the way takes all that muscle mass out of the way for you to get some better views of your ventrodorsal chest radiography. Thymomas, of course, are very common. You may be cautious anaesthetizing your rabbit for that purpose, but this is a rabbit that has been anaesthetized and intubated. And obviously, what we're really looking for here is not only increased soft tissue density within the thoracic cavity, but really you want to be looking at your carina and looking at your trachea and looking for signs of elevation beyond normal, which obviously here we've got very nice elevation beyond, which is consistent with, I guess, increased soft tissue mass or density within the thorax. And it's worth just having half a nod to cardiomegaly here. We see a lot of heart disease as well. So if you're seeing increased soft tissue density in the thorax, just think about heart as well. We see a lot of heart disease too. This will also cause just a complete lack of inflation and things and elevation in trachea as well. Now, if you've got a severely dyspneic patient and you're thinking, how am I going to get this patient to get some thoracic radiography from that, then again we can blinker them. That works quite well. You can take a DV view, but most rabbits, when you're looking at taking conscious dorsoventral views or even lightly sedated dorsoventral views, they do tend to hunch themselves up, and this makes it very difficult to get thoracic radiographs you can interpret. Maybe you'll get away with abdominal radiographs in this circumstance, but again, because they're all hunched up, it just doesn't sit quite well and makes interpretation much more difficult to do. Now, another nice little trick for these, if you're wanting to get a lateral chest radiograph, which obviously for dyspneic patients I'd argue is more useful than trying to get a scrunched up dorsoventral, then if you've got the capacity for it, horizontal beam is brilliant for these cases because you're able to get the rabbit with its blinkers on, position it in such a position such that you've got abdominal contents falling back away from the thorax to ease the breathing, and you can simply do that by elevating the front legs off the floor. It also brings your image area you're interested in into the bit more into the center of the plate, so you're not missing the bottom section of the thorax. And positioned carefully with this, you can also then start to look towards drawing the front legs more cranial, which again is maximizing your exposure of the thorax. And this is quite a nice way of getting a relatively stress-free functional lateral radiograph of these rabbits. Again, it's horizontal beam. That does give you, I suppose, one nice advantage in that if you do have increased fluid within the thorax, whether that be blood, whether that be pus or an exudate or something, or transudates, you're going to see a very clear fluid line across that radiograph as opposed to a whiteout, which gives you a very clear indication of what's going on. So that's got a nice advantage of horizontal beam when you're dealing with free fluid. And this is just showing you the radiograph of this particular dyspneic rabbit that we're looking at here. And again, we've got one leg that's been sadly has strayed backwards on this radiograph here, which obviously is slightly preventing full assessment of the cranial thorax. But again, the point to make here is you've got to look at your trachea and your carina. This is feeding down to a more normal position. So the fact this hasn't been elevated and hasn't been drawn caudally, in essence, is removing the possibility of there being a large thymus here or cardiomegaly here as a cause of a problem. So I'm fairly happy that that isn't the cause. But obviously, we've got markedly increased soft tissue density here throughout the lung fields, focal sort of bullet sort of areas, really. This, in combination with the increased size of the liver, this actually is a liver tumor that has metastasized in a very old rabbit. But, you know, perfectly functional radiograph for making your clinical judgment on in a patient that otherwise you just could not obtain these sort of images because of severity of disease. And also quite useful, just bearing in mind if you're going to be putting nasogastric tubes in these, rabbits sometimes don't cough if it goes down the trachea, so you've got to be a bit cautious. And again, your thoracic radiography is very useful for evaluating correct placement of nasogastric tubes as well. Abdominal radiography, of course, is something we use a lot. And you'll normally get away with sandbags for these. Maybe a little bit of sedation needed for lateral views, but in most cases you can get these positioned quite nicely with sandbags. The rabbit, like I say, will hunch itself up for a dorsoventral. You can get better views with light sedation. And in preference, again, I'd be looking at a ventrodorsal view. I'd say that's far superior in terms of enabling adequate interpretation of your abdominal radiographs. But this is a conscious dorsoventral view. But again, you can see we've had to put quite a lot of weight on this rabbit to make it sit still. We've got the sandbags compromising both the pelvic and the thoracic regions. And again, this rabbit is going to be slightly hunched. So quite difficult, I'd say relatively poor quality radiograph is likely to be the outcome from this. So sedation, again, far better in terms of your positioning for your lateral abdomen. Again, you can get the legs pulled back out of the way quite nicely. If you're going to do a DV and they're sedated, again, in complete contrast to a non-sedated rabbit, I've got these legs pulled out backwards. It's not hunching forwards here. I've got this stretched out. Front legs I'm moving as far forward as I can do to enable a really clear DV abdominal view to be taken. But in an ideal world with a little bit of sedation on board, if I can manage to get a beautiful ventrodorsal view, that's so much the better. I can stretch the legs forward. I can fix those down with a little bit of micropore, stretch the back legs out. And this is a far better position for either if you're looking for thoracic radiographs as well, but particularly for getting detailed analysis of abdominal contents, this is a good way forward. And the sort of views we're looking at, this is a relatively normal lateral view here. We've got a little bit of gas maybe working our way through GI tract, but nothing of significance. Kidney obviously sitting here. Second kidney just hiding behind stomach at that point, with stomach outline sort of pushing around this sort of level here. Liver is always right up within the thoracic ribs here. If you can palpate your liver or see your liver extending beyond here, then you do have hepatomegaly confirmed, really. When you're looking at GI disease, we see a lot of it coming through. This is a more classical GI stasis case here now, just to show you that. We've got a lot of gas production here, and gut content is becoming dehydrated and peeling back from the gut lining. We've got a lot of gas coming through here in cecum as well, but that's quite a classical GI stasis sort of case. Another one here, much more minor again, a little bit of gas halo, but nothing too significant. And we've got a little bit of sludge in bladder as well, which obviously is also worth looking at while you're checking these out. This one, another GI stasis case, quite an obese rabbit. So we've got a lot of body fat here. Kidney number one, kidney number two. Stomach is here and looks okay, but obviously a fair bit of gas working our way through small intestine down at this level. As we're progressing through, this really is cecal gas, and you get to sort of see even the folds within the cecum as we go through that sort of setup. And this obviously can be, you can get some quite severe cecal tympani, which can be quite painful for the rabbits as well. VD views, like I say, can be helpful as well to have a look at this, but the lateral, I would say, is the mainstay for me for the interpretation of the GI stasis and slowdown. And you can also get gas working its way through into descending colon as well. So on here, we've got marked gas within cecum. This is proximal descending colon here, with more gas coming into it here. And obviously here we've got a classical halo above the GI content, dehydrating within the stomach here as well. So again, another classical gut stasis case. And I suppose one of the questions we want to ask ourselves is, do we have a GI stasis case, or do we have a GI blockage? And that obviously is quite important. And although there's lots of references to using electrolytes and things to evaluate these cases, and I think they're all very well and good, you've got to obviously evaluate them clinically and tie this in with radiography as well. And your genuinely blocked rabbits, whether it be one that's going to respond to medical treatment or whether it's one that's going to subsequently need surgery, they are markedly depressed, and you're able to get your conscious images really fairly quite easily. This is an unsedated rabbit with a GI blockage, and you can see here no weights needed. It's sitting on the plate. We pulled the legs forward. We got back legs out backwards. This animal is just not in the mood for fighting the situation at all. And when you're looking at these radiographically, you very clearly end up with a big, large distended stomach, which in essence is mostly fluid, because the fluid cannot be cleared because of either a pyloric outflow or small intestine blockage. You get a little bit of a gas cap as well, bearing in mind that is floating up on top of the fluid, because this isn't horizontal beam, this is vertical beam we're doing here. And again, if you're looking at the DV view, very, very similar sort of setup. And this is one that really is a very clear surgical indication once it's stabilized, given the severity of distension we've got within the stomach here. And bear in mind, your blockages really are always pyloric outflow or small intestine. If you've got big ballooning gas in your cecum, then wrong case for that. That's a medical GI case, really. Some maybe a bit more subtle. This is another distended stomach, not as obvious as the last case, but again, we've got the stomach outflow feeding out to this sort of distance here, quite markedly coming through. A little bit of a gas halo here, but again, this is one where you've got a blockage that may be one that will respond medically, but nevertheless, this is something you'll be wanting to monitor very closely. And if you're not sure of some of these cases, how long they're going on for and what's going on, then we may consider adding some barium into these. And what we basically do is we get your standard sort of fiber-based recovery formula that you would be using. We use then barium to mix with that powder. We give 10 mils per kilo by mouth. And then basically we start getting our radiographs. We tend to go for a plain radiographs in the first instance, give them the barium, immediately take a radiograph then after 30 minutes, an hour, then probably 3 hours, 5 hours, 8 hours, really spread sensibly, practically over the course of a day. And then really, if we're really quite keen, then we will do one the following morning afterwards to see what's going on. And really, we're looking for normal transit time and signs of sort of normal filling with no defects, really. So when you're looking at these, even fairly quickly, if you're looking at half an hour after barium is administered, you have quite a quick turnover of barium. So we've got a lot of it in stomach, which hasn't really mixed even fully yet, which is kind of anticipated, that we've already got a massive turnover filling the small intestine already. That's normal to get that sort of quick emptying of stomach at that point. When you're pushing sort of your next barium you're taking after lunch, we're getting much more thorough mixing of the barium with stomach contents. Again, you would not expect the stomach to be empty, and you'd never expect the barium to empty out, but you get a more even mixing. But what you have got here is now your cecum is absolutely chocked full of your barium, and you would expect that really at this sort of 2 hours even post-barium administration, you would be expecting to get your cecum filling with your barium. And if you go for 24 hours to the following morning, really then our stomach contents still have some barium left, but mostly emptying. At that point, your cecum should be full, and we normally would be expecting to see fecal pellets coming through, which are difficult to see in this particular radiograph. By now, you should be getting pellets coming through down the colon as well. And I suppose the nice thing with the rabbits, if you're running through a barium series and you're coming to the following morning and thinking, right, I need to consider taking my barium x-rays this morning, what you can see quite instantly is the difference between non-barium poo, and barium poo is very prominent and very obvious with these as well. So we know when we come to take the radiograph of this rabbit this morning, we're going to have fecal pellets right the way through the colon as well, in that our barium series has finished. Other reasons for radiographing abdomens aside GI tract, obviously, is reproductive tract and urinary tract. The main thing for these, really, if you're looking for urolithes, calcium sludge, nephromegaly and things like that, is if you've got anything there, because of the way calcium metabolism works, you're going to see it specifically as obviously calcium present either in sludge, stone, whether that be in the ureter or urethra. You're going to see that visibly straight away with the rabbit. So that's quite nice in that you don't need to panic so much about contrast for assessing for urolithes. You're going to be seeing that instantly. And obviously, if your bladder is filling up with a lot of sludge, then you're going to see that gravitating down and be quite prominent. And these may be your cases where you're considering doing flushes and things like that to empty out the bladder contents. It may be you want to do more investigation looking into screening for renal disease as well. And we do contrast. There's nothing to stop you doing contrast. If you're catheterizing these, we would normally do traditionally a double contrast where you would drain the bladder out. And obviously, you've straight away got a sample there for cytology and culture and specific gravity. We'd normally do a protein creatinine ratio as well on the urine, checking for really subtle signs of renal disease. And then obviously, you can instill some contrast material and followed by air after that to get your contrast pneumocystogram as you would do for a dog or a cat. And this works quite nice in the rabbits. Here you can see the catheter placed as well. Get an idea for any signs of bladder thickness in the wall or something like that. And again, when we're looking at doing these, for getting views of more caudal abdominal pelvis, anaesthetized, proper VD views with the patient positioned appropriately really is the best way to go for these. And obviously we do not really discussing orthopedics today per se, but obviously if you're looking for skeletal trauma, then again you do want to get your perfect positioning for ventrodorsal views and orthogonal views here for all of your limbs and spine as well. So just a couple of examples here just to make the point really. This is a growing animal with a pelvic fracture which ended up having an excision arthroplasty in order to sort of stop the hip joint from being just completely disrupted. And again, when you're looking at fractures or fracture repairs, there's a variety, obviously, again, orthogonal views used to evaluate these for planning your repair process. And again, the rate of healing for these really is very comparable to what you would expect for other species, in that you're obviously looking at radiographing really sort of a 2 weeks, a month down the road from those sort of repairs to see how things are healing, and looking again for callus and things from there. We do have a couple of questions coming through. Obviously, one of the questions is due to a doses for metomidine, buprenorphine, and ketamine. And as I said, for dexmedetomidine, we're looking at giving 25 micrograms per kilo. If you're going straight for normal metomidine, that would be 50 micrograms per kilo, but obviously essentially the same volume you would be using of those two products. 5 mg per kg ketamine, 0.03 mg per kg of the buprenorphine mixed together in the same syringe and given intravenously to effect. And you may get away with, like I say, half that dose depending on your rabbit. Second question that we've got here is about the chest radiography and how you're going to go ahead and get quality images of that if you find it difficult to intubate your rabbits. And that obviously does create a problem for you. Now, certainly if intubation is going to be difficult, then you can, with the V-gels or the supraglottic airway devices, those can be used and you can get adequate inflation of the chest for those quite happily for improving your radiographs. You just have to be a little bit cautious that you don't get some esophageal air creeping in. But again, if you do end up getting some air down into stomach, you're going to see that radiographically anyway as a consequence, so you'll be able to deal with that at that time. So a V-gel is another way of getting your inflated thoracic radiography for you. And the other question that we've got come through here is about the temperature of these rabbits. And I think it's worthwhile when you're dealing with sick patients coming through, or even if you're going to give them a little bit of sedation IV, whether that be midazolam, ketamine, whether that is going to be dexmedetomidine, ketamine and buprenorphine, we do have to be cautious that you've got a risk of hypothermia straight away with all of those. So I would always have an incubator ready so we can transfer that patient into somewhere nice and warm while they're recovering. And like I said, the advantage of your dexmedetomidine, ketamine and buprenorphine is you've got reversibility, but your midazolam ketamine is safer for a more critical patient and is both quite short-acting. So again, recovery is normally quite prompt for these. You can normally get them around quite quickly and back up to feeding and things again much quicker than you would do with a full anaesthetic for your imaging to be done. So that is the end of your webinar. I'm going to pass you now back to Emma. Thank you very much for attending.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Kevin for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.